Half Full of Sand. A stunning new war story for a shiny new year. It starts with rain on city pavement.
And it ends with a Billie Holiday song.
Heard you were dead.
The palm reader glances down at my hand and asks if I'm sure I want to hear it. Sister, I said, I've been hearing it since I was tall enough to cast a shadow. The palm reader sighs and blows out smoke through a nose like some demon turning on the open for business sign above a seedy barroom door. Okay, she croaks, here it is. You're gonna give me a sawbuck and then get the hell out of here before we all get dead together. You're bad luck, Jim, and I mean the worst. I'm not sure you're gonna make it to the opposite side of the street when you leave. She must have taken pity on me because she threw me some straight dope. Beware the number 5. It ain't good for you. Not that anything is anymore. I said thanks, then stepped through the door looking both ways, twice. Dozen steps when I caught sight of 5 guys walking my way. Each was wearing a smile big enough to be the grill on a brand new Cadillac. They were the smiles of wolves who wouldn't need to work very hard to get their next meal. I reached inside my coat into an empty armpit in hopes they'd believe that I hadn't left my revolver in a strange bed that morning. Cold sweat was forming a dance line across my forehead as the 5 men spread out to block my path, their smiles giving way to the kind of laughter one hears when standing on the gallows. We all faced each other, the guys with their laughter and actual pistols, and me with a handful of moist armpit. Just then a voice spoke behind me. It was the palm reader. She told the guys she just read my palm and knew who'd punch my ticket, and it wasn't any of them. The guys stopped laughing and looked confused, glancing at each other for directions. No one seemed to have any. They hadn't sent their best to brightest. I just shook my head, stepped up to the biggest one, and sunk my fist into his breadbasket, followed by an elbow to his Adam's apple. He went down like a big thing falling over. The four leftovers burned shoe leather getting out of there. Two slowed down to pick up their fallen comrade. I threw the pomace to tip of the hat. Stars before flagging down a cabbie. Way off behind the Empire State, I could make out my old buddy Orion fighting to stay remembered amidst all the grimy glitz of the big city lights. Brother, I said to the distant collection of clutter and dust, I know exactly how you feel. And two avenues to sink into my thoughts. I was starting to think I'd been given a bum steer, a pack of porkies, and enough red herrings to feed the entire army of the Potomac. I needed a lot of time and a very sharp machete to cut through all the lies and half-truths, but all I had was a dirty handkerchief and about a dozen blocks left on the cab's meter to work out who to hang the whole case on. Goldfish full of blood diamonds and the fisherman who'd been conked on the head with an engine block before he could cash in on his catch. From there, the diamond trail had gone cold, but still tantalizing enough for others to get knocked down and dragged about as though there was a roving pride of ravenous lions moving through underworld tunnels of the city claiming victims seemingly at random. But I knew it wasn't random at all. It was a jagged line of connections that I needed to get straightened out, but quick. Uh-huh.
dead.
The cab made some sudden jagged turns of its own, interrupting my thoughts. The driver seemed to have run into trouble with another cab. Now they were locked into a fast-moving dogfight, but instead of bullets, they spat hard words and frantic hand gestures. There was a lot of violent jockeying for better lane positions as both drivers melded masterfully with their machines, their two sets of hands, feet, and mouths all impressively bent to simultaneous action.
Been trained in the dick to bull.
Amidst all the mayhem, a new twist was added when the other driver began throwing coins at my car. This was new even to me. I sat in back, being thrown from one side of the car to the other, with my sudden laughter turning into a long coughing fit as pennies bounced off the window next to my head. But as the coppers rained on the cab and my hacking subsided, all the movement dislodged a nickel in my head, which finally dropped unpleasantly. It was something I'd known all along but hadn't allowed to be spoken, not even in my own voiceover. I knew who had the diamonds. I rubbed the knot behind my ear where I'd been clubbed last week. It was still sore, and now I was too, with myself. Leaning forward, I put my mouth through the little window separating me from the driver and growled a new address into his cauliflowered ear. He muttered a final insult to the other driver, dropped a fistful copper on the floor, and took a right turn so sharp I thought I might get catapulted over to Weehawken. When the cab left me on the curb, it felt that I had just survived being thrown across town by a tornado. I used my hanky to wipe the sweat off leather band inside my hat, then I folded it and put it in my breast pocket. I found a comb and ran it across my scalp, feeling all the old scars, bumps, and furrows. A topographical map of a life lived unwisely. I might be going to my doom, I thought, but at least my hair is combed. Dressed in pale blue uniform with bizarre epaulets like a ship's captain from somewhere north of Pluto. His peaked officer's hat had the building's logo on the patented leather brim, something like a coat of arms drawn by a distracted child. The brim dipped a little as he opened the door and showed me into the lobby with a look that said he'd never seen an actual Earthman before and hoped not to do so again. It was the kind of lobby that made designers rich and visitors wish they hadn't entered. The carpet ran long and deep, inhibiting movement and inviting the use of snowshoes for the lengthy trudge to the overly ornate elevator. Every surface was either a leather Chesterfield or some metallic shape like a rocket blasting off to a bright future that would never exist. I stood, waiting by the elevator door, letting the smoke from my cigarette curl up my arm and whisper at the ceiling, when something stepped out of the shadows and tapped me on the back of the head about as delicately as an atom bomb. I saw stars, so many stars I could have been at the Academy Awards show. My last thought before the curtains closed was that my freshly combed hair may somehow have softened the blow, which made me want to laugh, except that I couldn't because it was time to tumble off into the big ink. Your gun. You better wake up. Suddenly a begging hand is on your tie. You shouldn't make promises to dead people. He doesn't know how dead he is. In my mouth and a couple guns pointing at my two heads. I was seeing double. Everything hurt but my hat, which felt like it was full of sand. Turns out it was just the one gun, but it was big enough to do the job, and the hand that held it steady had fiery red fingernail polish on the end of each long, tapered finger, one of which was tickling the trigger hard enough to send the hammer halfway back to the Bowery. Just as I'd left them, full, red, dangerous. They weren't smiling, but they weren't not smiling. I needed to clear my head before the hammer sent a bullet to the Bronx and emptied it for me. You could have just started here and saved me a whole lot of trouble, Angel. Her eyes darkened. But then I wouldn't have had a fall guy going around town breaking things as subtle as King Kong. Here to help, just as my card says. Yeah, I said. I could use less rope around my body, a dry martini, and a 10-minute head start. A laugh would have been pleasant in other circumstances, but now it sounded like someone leaving you standing on a dock as they depart on a wonderful cruise ship, all covered in streamers to the sound of popping champagne. Just then, her garnet-colored telephone suddenly rang. She didn't want to take her eyes off me, but did so to reach for the receiver. As she did this, I finished squirming one hand free and threw my hat into her face. It wasn't much, but it did the trick as she batted the hat away with her gun hand and bobbled the phone in the other. I removed the rest of the ropes and was on top of her in no time. With feet up, the gun in my hand, and her sitting in my old seat looking rumpled and generally less happy than a minute before. I put a match to a cigarette and picked up the telephone to call Lieutenant Cross at the 52nd Precinct. I realized that the caller was still on the line. Hello? I forgot to mention your lucky number, said the palmist, her voice sounding like I was suddenly the one on that fancy cruise ship, holding a champagne flute, maybe with her by my side. The ones to this phone? Bingo, she said.
Later, the palmist and I sat at the Mint Club, exchanging stoic witticisms over a bouquet of dry martinis. She seemed to know what I would say next, and I liked it. I'd flipped Tino a C-note for the best table. He brought us a cheese plate, which we'd ignored. Over the cool sounds of G-Baby Downs and his downbeats, I leaned in and asked innocently, "What should we do next?" She gave me a backhand that would have felled Babe the Blue Ox, but she was laughing as she did it. "Let's go home," I said. She hit me, again. We exit, laughing.
And I won't get to do those little ordinary things that everyone ought to do. I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a queen, and foolish though it may seem to me, that's everything. The mere idea of you, the longing here for you, you'll never know how slow the moments go.